Hi guys, Ezekiel here. Quick notes before the podcast. I recorded this episode on October 25th, and I know it's now November 4th, so just so you know. Anyways, on with the scheduled show. Hello, everybody. I am your host, Ezekiel McAdams. Welcome to TV Aquarium, a spinoff pod of Pop Fishbowl. It is October 25th. So today, at least in my world, is a very special day in TV history. 20 years ago to the day, Millennium, which was on Fox in 1996, premiered. So it premiered on Friday night. So this is kind of in the heyday of The X-Files, because Millennium was created by Chris Carter, and I don't know if it meant to be initially, but it later became a spinoff. It was set in the same shared universe, because there was an episode after Millennium ended where Frank Black went over to the X-Files and hung out with Mulder and Scully for an episode. So, quick thing, Millennium was one of my favorite TV shows. So it premiered October 25th, 1996. I was very little. I don't even remember how little I was, but I should not have been watching Millennium, and I did anyways. I don't know about the themes that were presented were very dark. So basically, Millennium was about a former FBI profiler named Frank Black, who was played by veteran and awesome character actor Lance Henriksen, who, after working with the FBI for a number of years, needs a break. So he retires and he goes home with his wife Catherine and his young 5-year-old daughter Jordan, and he tries to kind of just get away from that life, but he realizes that this work that he's able to do as a profiler, it never goes away. It's all consuming, and as much as he believes it to be a curse, it's also a gift, and that his gift is needed at times. And so he joins a group called the Millennium Group, which is a team of consultants who consult with the FBI and CIA and other law enforcement agencies whenever, you know, an interesting case gets too interesting, for lack of a better word, with them. So they go and contact the Millennium Group. So Millennium, at least in the first season, was really, and I'm quoting Chris Carter, who was the series creator on this, he really wanted to do Seven the series. So if you watch that movie Seven with Brad Pitt and Morgan Freeman, and they were tracking this serial killer who was using the seven deadly sins as kind of his MO, his modus operandi, that's kind of what Chris Carter wanted to do. He wanted to do a version of Seven every single week on TV that was very, like, a stark contrast from The X-Files, that was paranormal and sci-fi based and that kind of thing. So at the very beginning, Millennium was a show that was kind of like Serial Killer of the Week, which now we see very prevalent in Criminal Minds, that has a lot more kind of acclaim and notoriety to it. Millennium was really one of those kind of obscure shows that only lasted 3 seasons. So anyways, at the onset, at least the first season, there was kind of the background subtext of maybe all these serial killers that Frank Black is chasing all come from a common theme that is maybe like Millennium based, and that the end of the world kind of supposedly, because around that time, like around like the end of 99, there was the Y2K phenomenon that they thought was going to happen. A lot of people did believe that it might be the end of the world, and so Chris Carter was kind of thinking, well, maybe there's all these killers and serial killers that would kind of gravitate towards that force, and maybe Millennium or the end of the century is making them do these crimes. It was a very dark show. It was one of those shows that I don't really know why it caught my interest. I was lucky enough to meet Lance Henriksen about 2 years ago at a Comic-Con in my city, and he was really surprised because I told him how old I was when Millennium was on. He's like, you shouldn't have been watching that. And he said, what did you like about it? And I was like, well, I really liked kind of the psychology of what makes these serial killers think that way and how Frank was able to get into his head and the pathology. And he was really surprised that a child would have gravitated towards those kind of themes. But I loved it. And maybe I loved it because it was kind of that forbidden fruit, to kind of use a biblical term. I was not supposed to be watching it. It was a show that was not age appropriate, as my mom would say, for me. But it was one of those things. It was like Millennium and Sliders both aired on Fox in the mid-90s on Friday nights. And those shows were both kind of my jam. So Millennium really holds a special place in my heart. But after I bought the DVDs a number of years ago, I realized that I really only liked the first season. So spoiler alert, if you want to ever watch Millennium, if you haven't, just skip the next 10 to 15 seconds, maybe even a minute. In the second season of Millennium, they really deviated from what I think was originally the show's tone. So Chris Carter stepped away because he's juggling Millennium and X-Files at the same time. So the first season, he really kind of had like a hands-on approach. And the second season, he gave it to these other writers, Glenn Morgan and James Wong, who really made it more like kind of biblical, and they added these mythos, and like angels and demons were now part of that universe. We're really, before they weren't, there was more of an emphasis on kind of like good and evil being these inherent things that have always existed on the planet Earth. So we're in, as opposed to like the first season, that was more, that stuff was kind of hinted at. Like I said, it was more kind of subtext, that it was kind of there, but it was never, like, at least in my opinion, when I was watching the show, like as a kid and now, you know, later as an adult, it was never really kind of like superimposed like the second season kind of became. And at the end of the second season, Frank's wife Catherine, played by Megan Gallagher, died, and it was very shocking at the time. Like this is like way pre Game of Thrones, guys, and so like this is like mid 90s on network TV. You didn't kill the main characters, like, ever. Like there would be like a cliffhanger and there's like, oh wait, will the main character die? And it never happened. Hardly ever. And in this case it did, and I don't know the exact reasons. Maybe Megan Gallagher wanted to be let go out of her contract. There could have been that, but it was very shocking, especially for someone who was as young as I was, for Tab. And so, and Catherine was really, she was underutilized. She was never given really much more to do other than be Frank's rock and support system. I think there was one episode in the first season that was really a Catherine episode, and honestly, it's one of my favorite episodes of the season, despite it being very dark and kind of graphic and a little disturbing, even as an adult. So when Catherine was removed from the show, it kind of lost that rock, it kind of lost that anchor. And then in the third season, Millennium reinvented himself again. So now this kind of takes place after the Millennium, and Frank is working for the FBI. He's returned to work for the FBI, so now he has a partner. And then it focuses more on like kind of like case of the week kind of thing, like, you know, just kind of use a modern context, like a CSI, or again, like a Criminal mind, something like that. So each season it kind of reinvented itself. So my favorite season of Millennium, the one that was most memorable to me, was the first season. So I remember being very disappointed because when the DVDs came out, I bought like the first and second in season, and like binge wasn't really a term like 10 years ago, but I binged both seasons back to back. And as soon as I got to season two, I'm like, oh yeah, I remember not liking this as a kid. So that's just me. But the interesting thing is people have opinions, right? So there's some people who love the tone of the second season. So disregard whatever I say. It's really all up to you. I personally did not like the second season of Millennium. I've only seen like two or three episodes of season three. I really, really didn't like that one. So I kind of stepped away. The first season is my jam, but for a lot of people, like I said, the first season is not their jam, and they really like the second, and some really like the third. So Millennium is, I think, a very underrated show, especially in the kind of the TV landscape where we now have like all these CSIs, we have Criminal Minds, stuff like that. I thought like for a show in the mid 90s, again on network television, Frank Black is one of the most interesting television characters we've ever had. Like if I had to, again, if this is like Ezekiel's like top 100 characters, Frank Black would be on that list. I don't know the number or order, but he's definitely, I think, one of TV's greatest characters. And Lance Henriksen is just such an unbelievably talented actor, and he really should be given more stuff to do. I think he was surprised at the convention because, you know, they're when actors are brought in, they're usually kind of given like what they're most well known for. And so Lance Henriksen was in Aliens. He played an android character. He was also a character in the first Terminator movie with Arnold Schwarzenegger. He also played one of the leads in the Pumpkinhead series. And so Millennium is really not a show that like a lot of people know Lance Henriksen for, and so I think he was personally delighted that this person, like honestly, like it was my first and only ever convention, and I went only for Lance Henriksen, and he signed my DVD. I got like a picture of him. I got to talk to him for 10 minutes. It was very cool. I was very nervous because, you know, this is like one of my TV heroes. It's Frank Black that I'm talking to, right? So. So I highly recommend Millennium. It's 20 years old. I don't know whether it's on like Netflix in the States or Netflix in any other country. I don't know if it's on Hulu. I don't even know if it's on iTunes. I haven't checked. I just have the DVDs. But if you like dark stuff, if you like kind of heavy themes of kind of like good and evil and the pathology of what would make serial killers do these things, and a man who really puts himself into the mind of said serial killers, or you like Lance Henriksen, I would really recommend it. Like personally, as much as I love The X-Files, Millennium was always my favorite show. So that is Millennium. In terms of what I'm watching now, there's like one episode of Quarry left. There's one episode of The Strain left. There's a couple episodes of Atlanta, I think like two episodes of Atlanta, one or two episodes of Better Things. But again, kind of like my list kind of has stayed the same where, like, let's see, I'm just gonna go back to my list. Forgive me, guys. You can hear the clicking in the background. Yeah, there's like only one episode left of Atlanta. There's two episodes of Better Things. I got one more of Quarry. I got one more of The Strain. I'm really, you know, enjoying all the ones that are kind of like I'm just kind of picking away at. Like this fall, at least for me, has been like just full of like really, really good shows. Like Pitch, I love Channel Zero, Candle Cove. There's a few episodes of You're the Worst left, which is one of my favorite comedies. Everyone knows how much I love Pitch that I had to start another podcast for it. Westworld, I'm really enjoying. Like I said, it took me a while, but I'm really enjoying Atlanta. I love Better Things. Quarry has been a nice surprise. The Good Place is sort of finding itself. The Exorcist has been fun. And then Divorce and Insecure. So that's kind of my thing. Now, I kind of had a kind of two-pronged agenda this week. I was going to talk about two shows. I was going to first give out my celebration shout-out to Millennium. I also binged the first season, all 10 episode of Hulu's Freakish. So a little bit of context again. So I'm such a TV like geek and freak and nerd. So I go to this site, futoncritic.com, and I look at all the networks are doing. So like the main four networks like NBC, CBS, Fox, ABC, but also the cable networks. And so you've got your HBO and you've got your Showtime and you've got your FX and AMC, but also like, you know, TBS now, History's got some stuff, Sci-Fi has some stuff, but also now you have ventured into the streaming world because like there's just so much peak TV, guys, that we have Netflix, we have Amazon, and we have Hulu. So I first heard about Freakish about 6 months ago, and I was just very excited because Hulu is still relatively new. I really enjoyed The Path. I've never watched the Mindy Project, so I've never watched any of the new episodes of that. But I really wanted to kind of give them a chance. And they had three shows coming out in a relatively short time. They had Freakish. They had Chance with Hugh Laurie, who a lot of people know from House. And they've got a show that premieres in December called Shut Eye that's about like a private eye show-esque kind of thing. So I was really excited about those ones. I liked the idea of Freakish because, just personally, I like horror shows and I don't think we have enough. It's nice in this landscape to have shows like The Strain, to have Channel Zero Candle Cove, to have The Exorcist, you know, to have, you know, even kind of like reality doc-ish of shows like Paranormal Witness or You're Haunted. Stuff like that I'm always going to gravitate towards and kind of get more excited about. So I didn't really know what Freakish was about. There really was no kind of synopsis or plot. I watched a very quick teaser trailer and all I knew that it was about like high school and possibly zombies or monsters kind of thing. And I got very excited. So I had to watch the show by other means, because I am in Canada, and if Hulu is listening, they still have not ventured over to us. We don't have Hulu available, or Amazon for that matter, in our country. So I found Freakish on Hulu by other means, and I watched 10 episodes, and this is kind of my thoughts. It's okay. It was very cliched and kind of like paper thin, both on the story and the characters. So I'm going to quickly kind of give a bit synopsis. Again, this is not really a spoiler-esque podcast. If I'm going to mention kind of a spoiler, I'll give kind of like a spoiler warning. But the general premise is there's an explosion at a chemical plant. There's a bunch of students at this high school on a Saturday. Some are in detention. Some are just, you know, either at football practice or cheerleading practice or something. And so there's this big chemical explosion. So all the students, some of the teachers go to the school and then realize that this gas, this leak from the chemical plant is turning people into kind of zombie, I want to say, I'm using esque a lot this time, but zombie-esque creatures. It's not really for certain if they are zombies or just zombie-like, but it's basically kind of the zombie MO. You know, they eat flesh, they eat you, and if they, you know, bite you or try to eat you, then you eventually turn into one of them. And on the show, the characters call them freaks, just like I think on Walking Dead, they don't ever refer to the zombies as zombies. They call them like geeks or something, I think. So they refer to the zombies as freaks. And so it follows these characters, and it just, some of it was really interesting, but a lot of the show's problem is that as short as 10 episodes is, they really kind of drag out a lot of the things. A lot of what made the show interesting for me happened in the last two episodes. So episode 9 and 10 is when things got really going. And so then I had basically 8 episodes of lead up. And when the story isn't particularly developed more other than kids must stay away from zombies in the school, and the characters aren't really developed. So you've got your standard tropes. You've got like the kind of the outcast, you've got the bully, you've got the, you know, pretty girls that are part of like the clique, and like one of them is a cheerleader and she's also dating a football player. Yes, they actually go with all those things. It's kind of like Breakfast Club, and I think that's what they're maybe going for in a homage, but it'd be like if Breakfast Club wasn't as good. Like, let's say it wasn't made by someone like John Hughes, and it was just about a bunch of people in detention, and it was really boring. I don't think it would really be memorable, in my opinion. And so that's kind of what happened with Freakish. Now, I'm going to talk about some of the pros. So what I didn't know at the time is the company that is behind Freakish, Awesome TV, was created just for the pure avenue of getting teen content, whether on a network or a cable or a streaming platform. So Hulu didn't actually create Freakish. They bought it and they've licensed it. It's just like Netflix, you know, acquires a lot of content from the BBC in the UK, and then they kind of brand it as a Netflix original. Whereas is it actually being produced by Netflix? And so this is the same case. Freakish was not produced by Hulu. It was acquired by Hulu from Awesome TV. And so I really like Awesome TV's mandate. I like the idea of giving teenagers content. The problem was is that the writers for Freakish, just in terms of the dialogue and the vernacular that the kids were using, it was very dated. Like, it felt to me like somebody who graduated from high school like in the early to mid 80s and is now kind of like, you know, 45-ish, trying to write high school students rather than like going and either getting a writer that is familiar or doing research. And so again, like I said, the tropes, we've all seen this. This goes back 50, 60 years where there's the jock and the cheerleader and the outcast, and then they all come together magically. And so part of the problem with Freakish is that they come together magically, and so there's sort of conflict, but there's also a lot of the writer rule is, you know, show, don't tell. So a perfect example is one of the characters gets bit and becomes one of the freaks, and her older brother is saying to, you know, the fellow students, please don't shoot her, she's my sister. And he's saying, you know, she loves Harry Potter and she is always into Hufflepuff, which is one of the houses in Harry Potter, and that she likes to play the flute. And see, the problem with that is that's kind of telling the audience rather than showing. We never see the character playing her, or, you know, like talking about her love of flute, or playing the flute really, or going into Harry Potter. And it could have just been like a very obscure thing, like her backpack is Harry Potter themed, or she has a book or something that she's reading throughout the episodes that would have given people a sense that this character did all those things. Because after the brother mentioned it, it was never brought up again. It wasn't like, oh yeah, right, like she's really into Harry Potter. So it's kind of that rule that, like I said, writers will call show, don't tell. And so that being said, watching Freakish all 10 episodes was really hard. I yelled at my computer screen for most of the 4 to 5, 6 hours that I was watching it, because it was very frustrating. But like I said, I want to give a shout out to all the people that are behind Freakish. You'll apologize if I don't remember your names offhand, but I definitely respect the effort. Despite me not enjoying the show, I definitely think you should do more content, and I really, really respect the effort. So, but again, opinions are different. There may be some of my fellow listeners that really enjoy Freakish. And so again, if you're into shows that are kind of zombie themed and post-apocalyptic themed, definitely check out Freakish on Hulu if you're able to. Anyways, guys, we're nearing 22 minutes here, so I'm gonna let you go. Have a wonderful day, and I'll talk to you next week. Bye.